Chapter 21. Capitalism, baby. I hate needles. They are invasive, unnatural, stabby. I usually look away, but this time I watched. I wanted to remember. As the nurse jabbed that second woman-made miracle in my left arm on April 22, 2021, I felt a relief I had no idea I'd ever need. I sat at the end of a long row of plastic tables inside the Veterans of Foreign Wars outpost in Luray, Virginia, where rural nurses ambled about, and masked strangers in flannel and trucker hats sat in wait for cooking timers to ding. After 15 minutes, those who showed no adverse reactions were allowed to exit into a world with renewed possibility. I might have cried if I weren't so angry. As of that morning, the United States had confirmed about 32 million infections, and 570,082 Americans had perished. The 600,000 death milestone was fast approaching. But the injection soothed, for a moment, the grief of knowing it didn't have to be this way. Despite ourselves, there was hope. I spent my 15 minutes thinking about the dark year and of the sincerely beautiful and patently opportunistic things that had to happen to get that concoction inside me. I thought about how I didn't deserve it. Hell, most of us didn't. There I was, receiving salvation well before most of the world, for no special reason other than the fact that I was an American. For all our blundering and self-imposed heartache, we had accomplished at least this. And we did it the American way. We threw money at that sumbitch. Lots of it. Capitalism, baby, I whispered to no one in particular. The United States did, in months, what would have previously taken years. It was a true industrial feat, helped along by innovation that proponents will say capitalism fosters. The efficiency with which it was done is largely a credit to the capacity, investment, and knowledge base of the private sector and publicly traded companies. And yes, greed was a factor. Government scientists, to the Trump administration's credit, overcame bureaucratic barriers to balance expedience and safety. But the success of the vaccine in the United States is not without nuance. It was only through decades of government investment and publicly funded research that the bedrocks upon which the vaccines were built came to be. A guaranteed payday and the promise of perpetual income also spurred pharmaceutical companies to develop, test, and deploy vaccines. We paid for the research that made them possible, then for their development, and will continue to pay for the products themselves to the enrichment of pharmaceutical corporations and their shareholders in perpetuity. The Pfizer-BioNTech shot I just received, as well as the vaccine by Moderna, was designed to trick human cells into copying and producing a harmless piece of the virus to trigger an immune response by emulating spike proteins unique to SARS-CoV-2. The vaccines teach the body to attack it. Should the real virus show up, the body would be ready with our own custom antibodies to knock it out before it could take over. Traditional vaccines introduce the body to a safe amount of a virus, often a partial or inert version, which is just enough to trigger the body's immune response, but typically not enough to sicken the patient. This is how we inoculate against chickenpox, measles, and influenza. They work, but producing and testing a new vaccine this way is tricky and can take years. Instead, the Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna vaccines breezed through human testing and FDA approvals by exploiting a biological end run that a few scientists had eyed for decades, but which hadn't been brought to market until COVID-19 mobilized scientists across the globe. Those vaccines were built using messenger ribonucleic acid, mRNA. A single strand of genetic material, mRNA delivers instructions to cells about how to produce proteins. mRNA has one job, and that is to pop into a cell, drop off some blueprints, and then disappear. In the 1990s, scientists began exploring whether these genetic couriers could be tweaked to instruct cells to pump out designer proteins, so to speak. If scientists could tell cells which proteins to make, the body could create its own defenses to treat any number of ailments ranging from the flu to cancer. The potential application of such a technology seemed boundless, and the upside for humanity immeasurable. Whoever figured it out, one would think, would be an instant billionaire. But nothing is so easy. The story of how modified mRNA grew from a fantasy to a global vaccine worth many billions of dollars, and the scientists who toiled through poverty and obscurity to make it happen, is worthy of its own book. Its protagonist would be Dr. Katalin Karikó, a Hungarian-born biochemist who spent much of her career on the fringe of academia, navigating a male-dominated field, struggling to secure research funding for an obsession the larger scientific community dismissed. After she landed a low-level research professor job at the University of Pennsylvania in 1989, she and a few colleagues tried for years to show mRNA could patch up blood vessels ahead of surgery, for instance, or maybe help treat stroke patients. They tested on lab tissue samples, mice, and rabbits. By the mid-1990s, she could instruct cells to produce the proteins she wanted in a petri dish. But in lab tests, the mice injected with synthetic mRNA got sick. Their immune systems were sensing treachery early and were killing the messenger before it could reach their destination cells. Karikó's many appeals for grant funding were rejected, and without money to support her job, the university essentially demoted her to a researcher without a lab or financial support. An academic no man's land. She pressed on, and in the late 1990s partnered with a fellow UPenn scientist, an immunologist named Dr. Drew Weissman. Together, the two secured about $2.3 million in grants from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Anthony Fauci's agency. That public money helped support nearly a decade of trial and error. Finally, in 2004, they cracked the code. They realized that their synthetic mRNA was missing a key modification that wraps naturally produced mRNA in a kind of invisibility cloak. Once they introduced that modification, they were able to send in their synthetic mRNA to work its magic without setting off any immune system alarm bells. It worked. And in fact, the additional molecule greatly amplified the strain's ability to synthesize proteins. They now had a reproducible method for altering cell protein development without wreaking havoc on the immune system. Still, few cared. The two struggled to secure substantial funding. They submitted findings to scientific journals, which were equally indifferent. They continued with better experiments nevertheless. Eventually, they proved they could induce a monkey's body to make proteins that elevated red blood cells. A major discovery that raised other possibilities. Could the same process be used to create protein hormones like insulin, as a potential treatment for diabetes, or even to instruct cells to copy parts of a virus and induce an immune response? They patented their method, hoping to find a way to bring the technology to market, following other scientists who parlayed publicly funded innovations into riches. They pitched their work to pharmaceutical companies and venture capital firms, but none would bite. In 2005, they published the bedrock paper that illustrated how to successfully sneak synthetic mRNA past the immune system to, in essence, hijack a cell's protein production. That pioneering 2005 paper caught the attention of Derek Rossi, a Canadian biologist who saw the potential for the technology to create stem cells, bypassing the ethically sticky issue of working with stem cells derived from human embryos. In 2007, working as an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School, Rossi and his lab found success. Rossi knew the market potential and reached out to another Harvard scientist and another biomedical rock star named Dr. Robert Langer, whose lab was down the street at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Langer's resume boasts more than 220 major awards and hundreds of patents licensed to many pharmaceutical and other medical companies. He knew how to get it done. The three ambitious scientists managed, with some colorful hype, to attract deep-pocketed investors, and in 2010 formed Moderna, a portmanteau of modified RNA. The company began building on Kari Koh's discovery, and with some savvy executive hiring and bullish marketing, the founders' wealth grew by billions of dollars before Moderna even brought a product to market. As Moderna made headlines, a scientist couple in Germany launched a quieter foray into the cottage industry Kari Koh and Weissman had set off. In 2008, Ugor Sahin and his wife, Özlem Türeci, founded BioNTech, shorthand for Biopharmaceutical New Technologies. They would make their U.S. headquarters in Cambridge, Massachusetts, home to both Harvard and MIT. While Moderna exhibited the spectacle and glitz of a tech startup, BioNTech's proprietor stuck to science, avoiding public relations, while at the same time publishing for the world's benefit research mostly focused on cancer treatments. In 2013, the company hired Kari Koh as an executive, finally offering her financial remuneration for her groundbreaking work, which she technically didn't own. In 2016, the University of Pennsylvania licensed Kari Koh and Weissman's key patent to a Wisconsin company called CellScript. The next year, that Wisconsin company would make easy money by sublicensing the patent to Moderna and BioNTech for $75 million each, according to Scientific American magazine. Neither of the two companies was initially working toward vaccines as its primary business, according to news reports. After raising more than $2 billion, Moderna hauled in another $600 million in its initial public stock offering. In January 2020, before announcing it was working on a COVID vaccine, the company was worth around $6 billion. BioNTech also went public in the fall of 2019, raising a more modest $150 million, for a total valuation of about $3.4 billion. The two companies couldn't have had better timing. As soon as scientists in China shared the novel coronavirus's genetic sequence in January 2020, the companies got to work. BioNTech partnered with Pfizer to create and distribute a vaccine. Unlike other companies, Pfizer chose not to accept seed money through Operation Warp Speed, the Trump administration's Manhattan Project to develop the vaccine, envisioned by Dr. Rick Bright, Peter Navarro, and others. Pfizer's CEO said the decision kept the company free of political influence. Democrats may want to forget this, but then-Senator and vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris and others had raised concerns about any vaccine the Trump administration rushed through. Trump, after all, was a well-documented liar, but the message did not help to bolster public confidence in the legitimate scientific work being done behind Operation Warp Speed. Moderna managed to design its vaccine, built from the virus's genetic information, in just 2 days and shipped the first dose to the National Institutes of Health by February 24th to begin testing. A marvelous turnaround. Moderna had already designed its vaccine and was flush with cash, yet it would become one of the top beneficiaries of Operation Warp Speed. After Congress approved the CARES Act in spring 2020, the administration began a roughly $18 billion funding spree with private companies to develop a vaccine. In mid-April, Moderna was given about $483 million in federal money, sending the company's stock price on an upward trajectory that would continue well into the next year. Less than 2 weeks later, the company awarded board member and longtime pharma executive Moncef Slaoui options to buy more than 18,000 company shares at $46.37, according to filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. This meant that, depending on the timing, If Moderna's stock skyrocketed, he could buy up shares at a discount not made available to the public. That added to about 137,000 options he already had. On May 15th, Trump announced that Salawi would be one of two czars in charge of Operation Warp Speed. Facing public scrutiny, Salawi resigned from Moderna's board, forfeiting his most recent options, which had not yet vested. But because the Trump administration labeled Salawi a contractor, he was allowed to otherwise keep his existing stake and vested options at the same time he helped direct billions that would go to that very company. That day, Salawi's Moderna portfolio was worth about $7 million, according to an analysis by Kaiser Health News. 3 days after his appointment, Moderna announced positive results from its first clinical trials. The company's stock price jumped, and Salawi's value in the company reached $9.1 million, Kaiser Health News reported, though HHS told the news outlet that he sold them at around the $8 million mark. From January 1st to late May 2020, the company's stock price soared about 300%, from less than $20 a share to a peak of about $80 a share. In that time, Moderna executives made a mint, selling off $89 million in stock. Moderna's CEO, Stéphane Bancel, pocketed $13.6 million, selling just a sliver of his 9% stake in the company. The company's chief financial officer, Lawrence Kim, made a $37 million profit in the same time frame. Damien Garde, a reporter for Stat News, a respected science news outlet, bird-dogged this trend over many months. In July, BARDA gave Moderna another $472 million for vaccine development. By October 2020, Moderna's chief medical officer, Tal Zaks, was growing $1 million richer every week through stock sales, Stat News reported. On December 18th, the FDA gave emergency use authorization to the Moderna vaccine, which boasted an astounding efficacy of 94.1%, sending its stock soaring. The federal government would order 300 million doses of the vaccine for about $4.94 billion. By February 2021, roughly a year into the pandemic, Moderna executives had sold more than $321 million of stock in hundreds of transactions, far more than any other company associated with Operation Warp Speed. Because of COVID and enormous buy-in from the federal government, the company's valuation ballooned from less than $6 billion in 2019 to nearly $129 billion by the fall of 2021. From the beginning of 2020 to the middle of August 2021, when it peaked at about $484 a share, Moderna's stock price increased a whopping 2,419%. Just before the stock peaked, the company announced a $1 billion stock buyback program, cashing investors out at a stock price some analysts believe to be overhyped. This maneuver extracted cash almost entirely attributable to taxpayer money and rewarded it to company executives and shareholders. Moderna also benefited from other public investments besides the mRNA innovation, including from direct partnership with the National Institutes of Health. One advocacy group, Knowledge Ecology International, reviewed Moderna's patent portfolio and estimated the company benefited from $20 million in federal grants, which the group alleged were not properly disclosed. That group argued that the federal government, therefore, had a stake in nearly a dozen patents used to make Moderna vaccines. For its part, the National Institutes of Health has claimed partial ownership of a key patent behind the mRNA vaccine, for which Moderna hadn't paid royalties. The NIH did not enforce its rights over that patent as part of Operation Warp Speed, and advocates for low-cost drugs have urged the U.S. government to leverage its stake to deploy cheaper vaccines in the United States and around the world. Had the government enforced its rights, one study from New York University researchers pointed out, Moderna would have owed taxpayers $1.8 billion and counting. Moderna did not respond to my request for comment. Moderna isn't the only company to hit pay dirt thanks to COVID and taxpayer money. By the spring of 2021, the federal government would pay about $6 billion for 300 million doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, $1.2 billion for 300 million doses for the vaccine developed by British company AstraZeneca, and nearly $1.5 billion for development and purchase of just 100 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. While Pfizer declined seed money through Operation Warp Speed, that didn't stop the Trump administration from taking credit for the company's success. Pfizer took on its own risk in developing the vaccine, though its development was aided by $455 million from the German government through BioNTech. It did help that the U.S. government promised to buy the vaccine once it passed scientific muster, however. The boom in biotech and healthcare stocks created at least 40 new billionaires who had ties to companies that gained from COVID-19. Forbes magazine would report in April 2021. But by all accounts, those with ties to Moderna fared best. One Cambridge venture capital firm, Flagship Pioneering, sold more than $1.5 billion in stock during the pandemic's first year. That firm was helmed by Moderna's own co-founder and chairman, Noubar Afeyan. At the same time, executives at Moderna, Pfizer, Novavax, and others sold shares for a total of $1.9 billion, Forbes reported. None of it could have happened without public money. Accounting for the billions that were profiteered by corporations and rich investors from public investment, and tracing who may be owed what will likely take years, maybe even some litigation. Still, the fact that the government paid for the research, owned some of the intellectual property behind the vaccine but didn't cash in, then proceeded to pay billions for the development of the vaccines based on stuff it had already funded, and then proceeded to pay through the nose to give the vaccines to every American free of charge, illustrates both the benefits and perils of public-private partnerships. At least, the perils as they pertain to publicly traded companies who ideologically place shareholder profit above all else. Still, from the vantage of a worn-out nobody in the VFW hall in rural Virginia, I almost didn't care about the machinations that led to this moment. We got the vaccine. It worked. And it worked well. Some rich guys got richer, and the federal government got left holding the bag, but this is nothing new. America was built by pirates, and so too was our deliverance from COVID. There is probably a better way, a more equitable way. But this is how we did it. My kitchen timer dinged. I went outside, ready for what I sincerely believed would be my generation's summer of love. Deliverance, however expensive, seemed near. We blew it.